In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, February 1st, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the 3 o'clock hour, it's the Federal News Countdown, as always, and my guests on the countdown today, counting down their choices for the three most important federal news stories of the week, Dan Mintz, principal of ESEM Consulting and the new chair and executive director of the Advanced Mobility Academic Research Center. That is a mouthful, my friend. You have 20 seconds to explain what that is.
That's an attempt to pull research that has been in academic communities and make it more available to the government. Related to mobility implementation.
You got it in 20 seconds. Congratulations. It's a pretty interesting effort that you're working on, and we'll put some information about it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later today. Larry Allen is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and you don't even need 20 seconds to explain what that is. It is great to see you, as always. Thank you for coming in.
Great to be here, Francis. Thanks.
You have each chosen the stories that you think are the three most important federal news stories of the week, and we are going to start with where we always start.
Number three.
Dan Mintz, your third most important federal news story of the week is my colleague Jared Serbu's story on federalnewsradio.com. The headline is DOD moves meetings online, but IT systems can't keep pace. And I wonder if this is a case of maybe best intentions. They want to do the right thing and maybe just were not quite prepared for the response they would get.
Yes. Well, first of all, obviously, one of the things that's going on here is not just that it's a good thing to move these conferences online and do video conferencing and things like that. You do have pressures from the government to not spend money on going to conferences, which has artificially cut down on that all in the last year or so. But what it does tell you is that in terms of all these mobile activities, you know, and trying to do things so you can do remote access, it's insufficient to just say, great, let's do it. You've also got to plan the IT infrastructure around it because it can have unintended consequences. In this case, there's so much usage of this kind of activity that the bandwidth of the network is being overwhelmed.
The symbolic issue here also is the idea that the way that people look at conferences in government is dramatically changed and probably changed for the foreseeable future. This isn't a case that after the GSA scandal and some of the other conference issues that we've seen in the last year or so, that people will forget it after a while and will go back to the way things were before. This is a fundamental change, it looks like, in the way that agencies look at the way that they get people together to share information.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing, however, is coincidentally, the technology and the people who use the technology are getting so comfortable with using online access and remote access that it's not just happening, but it's actually practical to happen.
And I wonder if there is a way to quantify whether you get a better result, the same result, or a worse result by doing conferences this way than by the actual face-to-face interaction.
So I'm going to say two things that are a little bit contradictory. You always have the situation. On one hand, most of the evidence of doing remote interaction is that the results are very close to doing it in person. There's a lot of statistics in terms of online education, and online education generally has a very positive result compared to classroom education. So on one hand, that's the good. But there is a cultural issue and an interaction issue that you do lose. There is a richness to doing things in person, and that you lose that and the cohesion that brings when everything is remote. So if you're going to do more and more remote, you have to at least from time to time figure out how to achieve that same cultural cohesion.
My sense is from a congressional point of view, it will be very easy for them to say, you're right, that's nice, it's a good idea, but we can't afford it, so forget it. And Jared writes in this story, the Department of Navy conferences that had been given a green light under the heightened standards that followed the GSA scandal now have to be re-reviewed all over again, and reapproval is rare. And that's the part, I guess, where I pulled my thought that this isn't going to change anytime soon. This is likely to be how it is from now on.
In terms of having this remote?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I as I said, I think that the technology, first of all, I think there's a pressure to do it. But I think that people are going to find that you gain a very large percentage of what you would anyway through this. And when you get it, when it's a becomes a more natural thing to interface, again, video conferencing is really very powerful. People who haven't done it don't realize how natural it becomes over time. You, if it's particularly with people you know, it becomes a much easier way to interact than getting together.
Dan Mintz's third most important federal news story of the week is my colleague Jared Serbu's story on federalnewsradio.com. Headline, DOD moves meetings online, but IT systems can't keep pace. Larry Allen, your story number three this week is Jason Miller's story on federalnewsradio.com. OMB lays out 11 goals to give Section 508 some punch. Give me just a real thumbnail sketch very quickly about what Section 508 is.
Section 508, Francis, is part of the Disability Act, and it refers to the requirement in federal agencies that federal IT systems generally be made accessible and usable by people with a wide spectrum of disabilities.
So what is the importance in your mind of this list of goals from OMB this week?
Section 508 itself is not new. It's been through a couple of iterations. In fact, Dan and I were talking a little bit about that before we came on air this afternoon. All of the things that have happened. And I think the OMB this week is reminding federal agencies, look, Section 508 is on the books. It is a requirement. You shouldn't be putting it in boilerplate information about your contracts. And contractors, you have to pay attention to this as well.
And the idea of that, what are the implications for people in the agencies for these list of 11 things?
Well, I think the implication, Francis, is that OMB is signaling that they're getting serious about looking for agencies to really implement accessible IT. And as we get into new areas like mobile IT and making sure we have secure communications, accessibility has to be a front row part of that conversation. And I think that's where OMB is really coming down and saying to the agencies, look, you just can't expect your contractors to nod and clap and say, yes, we have a proven solution, that it actually really has to be shown to be something that's accessible, because as the IT framework becomes more and more intertwined and more ubiquitous in everybody's work life, people with disabilities are going to have to be able to have the same communication capability. Otherwise, we're really going to have a multi-tiered structure of government employees.
Now, you mentioned in the email exchange this week when you were telling me about your choices for the countdown that you worked on 508 issues quite a bit when you were the head of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Based on that experience, is it your sense that this timeline that's included in this list of 11 goals, is it your view that that is ambitious? Is it generous? Is it right on target? What's your sense of that?
Well, my sense is that if a contractor's reaction is probably going to fall somewhere along that entire spectrum, Francis, depending on where they are. Previously, in my work in Section 508 at the Coalition, it was obvious that the larger multinational companies and the ones that were really experienced with government business were ahead of the wave. And the conversations we had with government people then weren't about, oh, gee, this is a terrible thing, it's going to be really expensive. It's really, tell us what you want. We'll modify our systems accordingly. We want to get a competitive edge over people. And it was more very much, how can we help you? Of course, that's not all contractors. So if you get some mid-tier companies or some companies that maybe have one foot in and one foot out of the government market, they're going to think this is a very ambitious timeline, and they're going to be the ones, I think, that grouse more about the cost.
Larry Allen, is his choice for the third most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. Jason Miller's story, OMB lays out 11 goals to give Section 508 some punch. You can read all of our stories on this week's countdown, linked up later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And the second most important federal news story of the week from Dan Mintz and Larry Allen next on Federal News Radio 1500. AM.
Experience and stability, the two most important things when picking a website development partner. As one of Washington's largest website development companies, AmericanEagle.com, an industry leader, has completed projects for thousands of organizations, associations, businesses, and the government, from the local to the highest federal level. AmericanEagle.com's GSA schedule makes it easy to quickly order website design and development services. They also provide reliable and secure hosting solutions in their PCI-compliant data center. Whether you're a local, state, or federal agency, your website is likely the top communication tool used by your constituents. AmericanEagle.com understands the importance of governmental efforts for the public good and will customize solutions for your agency to ensure the continuity and success of your online operations. For federal government clients, please see their GSA schedule and explore some of their government websites at AmericanEagle.com. For any of your website development needs, including hosting and maintenance after your launch, call 703-WEBSITE. That's 703-WEBSITE. On Saturday, February 9th, 2013, the Northern Virginia chapter of the Armed Forces Communications and Electronics Association will host the 33rd edition of the annual FCA Nova Valentine's Ball. This fun social event will mix and mingle 700 industry, military, federal government, telecommunications, and IT professionals at the elegant and newly remodeled Tyson's Sheraton Premier. Enjoy dining, dancing, all while bumping elbows with some of the brightest minds in the industry. For more information, visit fcanova.org.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Enjoy the comedy of Emmy Award-winning Dana Carvey and dance the night away to the sounds of Jim Belushi and the Sacred Hearts Band at the 26th Annual Leukemia Ball, presented by Bio in partnership with Genentech, Saturday, March 23rd at the Washington Convention Center. D.C.'s largest non-political fundraiser features a world-class silent auction with travel packages from American Airlines and a chance to win one of two Mercedes-Benz. D.C.'s largest non-political fundraiser, the Leukemia Ball, supports the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's critical research and patient services programs. There are more than 19,000 people in the D.C. metro region living with leukemia, lymphoma, or myeloma. Someone is diagnosed with a blood cancer every 4 minutes. Help the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society cure blood cancer by attending this can't-miss event. To purchase a ticket, please call 703-399-2900. That's 703-399-2900. Or visit leukemiaball.org.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. New 508 regulations and new White House buying policy. We'll get expert insight into whether it'll all help people with disabilities access federal systems. Plus, the new BlackBerry Z10 goes on sale in another month or so. It's nifty, all right, but will it lure back federal users who left their first love? Those stories and more Monday morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Dan Mintz and by Larry Allen, and we're up to...
Number two!
The second most important federal news story of the week is selected by Dan Mintz. It's from Government Health IT. The headline is State CIOs Eye Enterprise IT and More Federal Flexibility. And I thought this was interesting, Dan, because normally the chain that we see or the line of progression that we see is from the states to the federal government, where the federal government looks at the examples of the states. And this story sounded to me like it's kind of going the opposite direction right now.
Yeah, I found that really interesting, and I think it's something that hopefully people are going to pay more attention to. The thought about the interaction between the federal government and state government IT tends to be one-off. So, for example, EPA was very early in doing something like that where they integrated some of the data, but that's just because the program did that. But there isn't a lot of activity necessarily and focus across the lines, but I think it's going to become more and more true. If you look at the implications, for example, of the Affordable Health Care Act, there's going to be a lot of intertwining between state IT and federal IT. And I just want to read one sentence from the report, from the NASIO report. NASIO is the Association of State CIOs, for those who don't know. says here, the foremost barriers to state innovation and implementation are due to the inconsistent interpretation of federal programmatic rules. I think that's a really profound statement, and I don't think we think about those things very much. So what this tells me is that there's a, that it should be, I think, a focus at the OMB level to have programs that work on what do you do in terms of architecture, particularly data standards. The report calls out NEEM. I've talked about NEEM probably almost every other time I come on here, the National Information Exchange Model, which originally was started by Department of Justice and DHS, but really is a method of having standard data across governments, in this case federal governments. But the NASIO report calls it out for also with state governments. I think that's a real important priority.
Larry, what do you see when you look at this? This isn't just an issue in my mind of the particular kinds of data that Dan is talking about. This is a broader big data issue, and because it's not just the state to federal and federal back to state. There are all kinds of other stakeholders in the data exchange model that we're seeing develop.
Well, certainly when you get into newer programs that cut across all levels, not just of government, but cut into the private sector as well. You think about some of the social welfare programs, some of the healthcare programs that we are implementing. They're not just implemented at the federal level, Francis. They have implications for state, local governments, and private sector employers all alike. So we're really talking about integration of data and the ability of systems to talk to each other on an entirely different scale than we have ever discussed before. And I think it's notable because I kind of look at the NASIO report as a reminder to their federal IT counterparts, and not just their IT counterparts, but their federal counterparts generally saying, hey, you know, we're here and we have our own budget realities and our own infrastructure that we have to deal with. You can't consistently come out with different rules and just load things up on us. In a way, it's a little bit similar to Dan's first story because, you know, everything sounds like a good idea at the federal level and then you run out of bandwidth. Well, this is the state saying that you have to think about those issues as well.
And we may see, whether we like it or not, over the next several years, a really direct and deep revamping of grant programs of all kinds across government just because of budget pressures, if nothing else.
We've already started to see grant programs become more and more like contract-related procurements, Francis, and with that comes a lot of transparency, which IT systems can bring to them those actions, but it also comes with a lot of regulation and oversight. IT can help, I guess, with some of that to an extent, but I think you're basically accurate. You look, we spend more at the federal level on grants than we do under contracts, and yet historically that part of the equation has gotten less attention. Maybe it will get more.
Do you expect to see it get more?
Yeah, yes, and building on what Larry said, the other thing they talked about was identity management. So we, you know, and some of the other things we're talking about is this broad area of security that's on everybody's mind. One of the issues the states have is identity management. That is, how can you be sure that the person who has signed on and is asking for information or applying for a grant is, in fact, that person or getting those benefits? So there's a very broad issue in terms of which the federal government's been wrestling with, has not quite come to closure on, but also is going to affect, has to be integrated back to the state. You need some common approaches to it, to how you do identity management in the security area.
The second most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Dan Mintz, is from Government Health IT. The headline is State CIOs Eye Enterprise IT, More Federal Flexibility. And you can read it linked up later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, Larry Allen's choice for the second most important federal news story of the week on the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
For P150, P150GA, P150OK, P150TN, C250E, C250Q.
Whoever came up with the saying, put your money where your mouth is, must have had some dental work done. Just a filling can cost over $100, and other procedures like crowns and root canals can cost you hundreds more. Without dental insurance, you could be putting a lot of money where your mouth is. But now you can get dental insurance for less than a dollar a day. This isn't a discount plan. This is real dental insurance for over 300 covered procedures. Everything from cleanings and fillings to crowns and dentures. For details, call Physicians Mutual Insurance Company, 1-800-200-0885. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies. Even if you're retired, you can see any dentist you choose and never have to pay a deductible. Get the coverage you need for less than a dollar a day and put less money where your mouth is. For free information, call now. 1-800-200-0885. 1-800-200-0885.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
The Office of Personnel Management is trying to stop the spread of flu at federal agencies. Director John Barry is encouraging employees to stay home when they are sick. In an email to department heads, he also reminds managers that federal employees can use telework, alternative work schedules, and annual and sick leave to take care of someone else with the flu. A full Q&A can be found on the Chief Human Capital Officers Council website, chcoc.gov.
The start of a new year is one of the best times to review the state of your financial affairs. Unfortunately, many individuals overlook one of the most important aspects of their financial plan, life insurance. WEPA, a nonprofit association, enables federal employees to purchase better life insurance at far better prices. As a superior alternative or supplement to FEGLI, WEPA provides more coverage, more benefits, and greater flexibility, yet costs much less. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more.
Caps fans, tickets are going fast. You don't want to miss any of the action as the Caps take on the Philadelphia Flyers on Friday, February 1st at 7 p.m. and the Pittsburgh Penguins on Sunday, February 3rd at 12:30 p.m. and the Toronto Maple Leafs on Tuesday, February 5th at 7 p.m. Buy your tickets today and there'll be no convenience fees through February 13th. Call 800-745-3000 or go to WashingtonCaps.com to buy your tickets. Don't miss out.
Kids exercising with asthma. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS Health Beat. Researchers in New York City say kids in some areas are more likely than kids in others to have exercise-induced asthma when symptoms come from being physically active. The researchers looked at data on 195 7- and 8-year-olds from middle-class households. At Columbia University Medical Center Mailman School of Public Health, Matthew Perzanowski.
Kids who are living in the neighborhoods with high asthma prevalence were almost twice as likely to have had exercise-induced asthma symptoms in the past year.
The researchers don't know why there were differences among neighborhoods, but they did find something that could help the kids. In general, one-third of kids who had symptoms had not used an inhaler to get medicine before being active. The study in the journal Pediatrics was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS Health Beat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The Association of Government Accountants National Leadership Conference is coming February 12th and 13th to the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC is the training event for developing and training government financial professionals to excel as leaders in today's competitive government market. Don't miss this opportunity to share best practices, to find solutions to shared challenges, to network with your peers, and to learn from the top financial management leaders and industry experts. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown, with the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected this week by Dan Mintz and by Larry Allen. And Larry, your second most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. It's a story that's been covered a lot this week, and it is the Pentagon's desire to add a bunch of people, a 500% increase, essentially, at U.S. Cyber Command. They have about 900 people now. They want to move that up to 4,900. And the first question I had when I saw this story break, this was early this week, was where are they going to get all these people? Because everybody's fighting over the pool as it is now. And then when you say you want 4,000 more, that's just going to stretch the demand even greater, it seems to me.
Well, that's exactly right, Francis. And that's one of the reasons why I picked this story. There's so many interesting aspects to it. First and foremost, the one that you mentioned, everybody wants a cybersecurity expert, but we're just not manufacturing them the way Henry Ford did Model Ts. And it takes a while. And then again, how does the government obtain these experts when there is strapped demand throughout our economy and the private sector has a little bit of an ability to offer better pay and benefits? So you know, if you're going to be buying these services or buying these people from DOD, I would argue that, you know, your best case scenario in the short to medium term is to get them from the contractor community, because it's going to be difficult to grow them in-house, so to speak. But even the contractor community does not have these amount of bodies just sitting in the dugout waiting for the game to start. So it's going to take some time. But the contractor angle is another reason why I picked this story, and that is, look, we talk about sequestration, we talk about government cutbacks and all this. Cybersecurity is one of the areas that I consistently think is a good opportunity for companies in this market, because there's such a high demand for cyber solutions, whether it's people or technology. There is a bright spot here and a real need to fill in with a good cyber program. DOD and DHS, the two agencies at the lead of this initiative, despite the fact that congressional legislation didn't pass last year on cyber, it's heartening to see the agencies moving ahead anyway and understanding that this really is a top priority issue.
Now, Dan, as I mentioned to Larry, when I first saw this story, my first thought was, where are they going to get all these people? My second thought was, what does this say about the way that the military and Cyber Command in particular views the available talent pool in the contracting community, that they're not satisfied to just go out and buy the talent that they need from the contracting community, that they want these people to be their own? And I wonder if that makes any difference in your mind.
Well, I think in the end, they're going to be forced to get what they can. Saying that you're going to open up a lot of vacancies and hire a lot of people doesn't mean, as Larry said, that they're going to suddenly magically appear when no one can hire them. I think the other interesting thing about this is in the cybersecurity area, there's the fundamental issue, it seems to me, in the DoD space associated with cyber is doctrine. You know, when somebody does a classical war, you have the advantage that you can at least see them cross a border somewhere. They throw a physical bullet or something across the border. With cyber, it's very difficult often to determine who did it, and then it becomes very difficult to determine what you're going to do about it. And so one of the interesting things to me with this is what are the implications of having made this decision in terms of what is the Department of Defense made in terms of decisions, so they've figured out what they would use these people for. And there is going on right now a big debate in terms of classical forces, in terms of Marines and Air Force and Navy, in the modern military sense, with non-state actors being around all the time, and that you may have to revamp the physical forces to deal with that. Well, dealing with cybersecurity attacks from non-state and state actors is an even more difficult task. And it's not obvious to me that that doctrine has been worked out and everyone is in agreement with what they should do.
It seems to me that that's actually unlikely that that's happened, because you're nodding your head in agreement with that, Larry.
Yes, I mean, I've participated in a couple of cyber panels with federal people over the last couple of years, including Richard Hale from DISA, who's one of the leading government experts in this arena. And his point was exactly the one that Dan just made, and that is, how do you, as the Department of Defense, or do you, as the Department of Defense, take a role in pursuing non-state actors of cyber terrorism to the point that you can even detect who the perpetrator was? And it runs an interesting question, and I doubt seriously if you have people from DISA talking about, you know, the proper role and the proper response. Certainly, that suggests that DOD hasn't figured it out yet. So Dan's point is a good one. How do you use these people, and how do you ultimately, as a Department of Defense, square your role with what may very well be non-state actors who nevertheless can deal some significant damage to our own national security or even just national infrastructure programs?
Now, I don't propose to know what's going on in this conversation in the Defense Department, but I do know that cyber experts that I talk to that talk to folks both inside the Pentagon, in defense organizations in other countries, and so on, there's still a lot of debate in those circles about some of the most basic issues of military cybersecurity. What constitutes a cyber attack? What level of, what certainty of attribution must you have before retaliation? All of those kinds of things may seem on the surface to be obvious or self-evident, and really aren't, for good reasons that are easy to understand when you really dig down into these issues.
Yeah, and the article itself alludes to these broader issues. It talks about the argument and complexity of the relationship of Department of Defense and the National Security Agency, NSA. Right now you have the situation where the person in charge of Cyber Command and the person in charge of NSA is the same human being. But there's a real question as to, is that a good thing or a bad thing? NSA nominally is supposed to be outward, external to the United States facing. And we had certainly controversy under the past administration over that issue. And if anything, this is going to becomes even more complicated, because you have this intertwining of domestic activity, since cybersecurity is not respectful of boundaries, and NSA, which is an excellent, excellent organization in terms of its capabilities, and the Department of Defense. So when is it okay to sort of trot upon privacy issues potentially, domestically and internationally? And I it's not obvious to me that this has really been thought about. It's understandable that people are so frightened by the potential negative consequences of not doing anything that they feel the need to act. It's human nature. But I suspect there's a lot of policy issues that still need a lot of discussion before they need to move forward.
I might only disagree with you on one point. I would be surprised if these issues haven't been thought about. I would also be surprised if any final decisions had been made about how to deal with any of them. So to that extent, I would agree with you that there's no codified policy in any of these areas yet that we're aware of.
No, there's no question. I talk to these people off and on, and the issue, everyone knows the issues. But the doctrinal issues have such enormous structural impact and budget impact and actionable impact that there's still argument about it.
The second most important federal news story of the week, as chosen by Larry Allen, is Pentagon to boost cybersecurity force. It's from the Washington Post. And it, like all the stories on this week's Federal News Countdown, linked up now on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We're up to the top of the list, number one, from Larry Allen and Dan Mintz, when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
For those of you who like to check your connection speed, you can go to broadbandreports.com. You can get their speed test. You can test your upload and download speed. I like to do that periodically. Sometimes my Fios download speed gets up to 16 megabits per second, but this morning I had 10 down and 3 up. And you've got 60 megabits per second. I'd love to have that kind of bandwidth, but 60 could be overkill. But I'd say anything more than 30 is probably not worth the money.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Welcome to today's lottery draw. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Are you a federal employee or government contractor? FederalNewsRadio.com is the best source for news that helps you do your job better. Our news team brings you the latest on federal pay and benefits, technology, defense, retirement, acquisition, and the federal budget as it's happening. FederalNewsRadio.com gives a voice to the federal community. Read and hear interviews with federal leaders, members of Congress, and industry. Find it all at FederalNewsRadio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected by Larry Allen and by Dan Mintz. And we're up to
number one.
The top of the chart, the most important federal news story of the week, is selected by Dan Mintz, is from MyCIOView.com. The headline is Mobility Has Big Impact on IT. And I must say, the article is insightful, Dan, but you must say that the headline of this particular story is kind of a duh headline. I mean, really.
Yeah, yes, I know. The sun rises in the east.
Yes.
Mobility has big impact on IT.
Mm-hmm. What was so significant about this article that you chose it despite the less than insightful headline that it has?
So to me, it resonated in two directions. One, mobility is having a big impact on IT.
Thanks for that. That's very deep.
So the interesting comment to me is the some of the statistics eventually work their way back to the things we've been talking about. When they did, and this is a report that eventually came from Accenture, where they did a lot of analysis both domestically and across around the world. And it turned out that they looked at percentages of people of IT leadership that are have projects or consider mobility important right now, this next year. And it was significant percentages everywhere. But the highest percentages were in the developing world, not in the developed world, which is almost intuitively, at least your first thought would be intuitively backward. You'd think people with more resources would be doing this advanced stuff. But in fact, in the developing world where there isn't wired capability, they naturally turn to the wireless capability. So the point being that those places that have a lot of wired infrastructure are not making the same kinds of advances. And that's a very interesting thing. So you may have some leapfrogging going on in terms of the United States. I think that's true also domestically, and that would include with our own corporations and government. In those, we're always budget pressured. It's getting worse and things like that. A lot of this transition, this goes back to the first article, that those places that have a wired infrastructure are not necessarily making the right decisions because they just, that's there, so I don't have to worry about it. But in fact, when you go to this kind of mobile capability, which means both your own stakeholders, employees can be mobile, but maybe more importantly, the ability to deliver government services in a mobile fashion out to the citizens is something you want to aim toward. If you don't, that first of all, the government will not necessarily be thinking through all the ways it has to change the way it does business because of all the infrastructure that's already in place.
Larry, this is something that we have heard from time to time throughout the smartphone revolution that we've seen over the last probably 5 years or so here in the United States, that we are potentially behind the curve for the reason that Dan just kind of articulated, and that is we have this legacy system of wire that developing countries aren't encumbered with, and it's turning out to potentially be a disadvantage for the reason that he said, because infrastructure decisions are made based on whether we have a similar capability, not the same capability. And if you have something that's close enough, the inclination, especially on the part of most companies and probably in the government moving forward, is, well, if we have something that's close enough, we're not going to spend new.
Well, that's one of the reasons, Francis, why I think you're seeing OMB push so hard on federal IT practitioners to pick up mobile applications and to pick up their implementation of mobile technologies. You've seen things about bring your own device. You've seen things about telework, a whole host of things that would get the government thinking, at least incrementally, about ways to use mobile technology at the federal level. But you're absolutely right. Once OMB pushes it out there, and OMB, last time I checked, doesn't have a field army to go out and watch over all these agencies. The reality is that at the federal level, we are in a very constricted IT arena in terms of money available. So mobility, a very big deal, but so is cybersecurity. So too is apparently cloud computing. So how does mobility compete for resources in this market? Certainly it's a top three or four priority, but that may not mean much when we're talking about cutting government funds overall, and the Navy coming out this week announcing that it was going to cut its IT expenditures by 25%. So you have to balance the good things that mobility can do and the way that it can really deliver innovative services, whether it's to other agencies at the federal or state level, or as Dan mentioned, to citizens, with the budget realities, and who knows where we're going to come out. Probably not at the front of the curve.
All right. You prompted me to think of something, Larry, that is not necessarily directly related to this choice that Dan made of the most important story of the week. But I wonder, if we think about a mobility initiative which the government's working on, and you mentioned cloud computing, there's shared services, there's data center consolidation. Are there too many initiatives now? Are there too many... I think of this party where there's piñatas hanging all over the place, and kids just wander from piñata to piñata trying to pick up the candy off the ground. And it strikes me that you reach a point where it's difficult to decide which one you need to focus on right now. Is that you've been there?
Yes.
At transportation, is that what this looks like to you?
Yes. It is a natural thing for people who are appointees that come in. I was an appointee who came in that want to try and change the world. And as I point out, that there's too many people who come in thinking that the only reason things aren't working is because they were not there. And now that they're there, everything can change. And it turns out that's not true. The reality is that you can only change a very small number of things. But it may be emotionally unsatisfying, and it might be politically look bad if you don't have this laundry list. It would be better if the government concentrate, in terms of the broad policy changes, that the OMB concentrate on two or three major initiatives and just keep coming back to them over and over and over again. And certainly no more than that. And I would say the laundry list is too big.
What do you think, Larry?
I would agree with that, Francis. They're all good ideas coming out of OMB, but if you have a lot of good ideas and don't prioritize them, then you're kind of setting yourself up and you're setting your agencies up to fail on some. And it gives people in the punditry and Congress excuses to say, well, you know, they did great on mobility, but they kind of missed the boat on cloud. Well,
right.
You know, what was your higher priority? For some agencies, it might have been mobility.
Yeah. Another former CIO, not Dan, indicated this to me, laid it out this way to me recently. If your choice is 100% of one thing, or 50% of two things, or 15% of six things, which would you choose? And my thought was I'd take 100% of one thing and be able to say, this got completely finished in the time that I was responsible for it.
If you get less than 100%, chances are when you leave, it won't get done.
It disappears.
It's interesting in terms of, we don't look at the things that have lasting value and the most impact. We tend to do a lot of buzzwordy things. You know, we talk about, just to give one example related to everything you just brought up, 70 to 80% of the IT spend in the federal government and in IT in general is spent on maintaining current applications. 70 to 80% is being spent on maintaining applications. And yet we spend all this energy on data center consolidation and all this other stuff, which is good stuff, but in fact is going to only help with at most the 15 to 20% that is spent on things like that. When it's actually this massive portfolio of applications, which just gets touched upon, but is not prioritized particularly.
The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Dan Mintz. It's from mycioview.com. It's headline, Mobility Has Big Impact on IT. And I promise that Jack Moore will not write the word duh next to that headline when he posts it up later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week, selected by Larry Allen, is next on the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Senator Chuck Hagel on himself.
No one individual vote, no one individual quote, no one individual statement defines me.
He made the statement during a day of tough questions in his quest to be the next Secretary of Defense. He was challenged over his past statements on Israel, Iran, Iraq, and nuclear weapons. Senator Lindsey Graham was harshly critical of Hagel for failing to sign letters in past years designating Hezbollah a terrorist organization. I'm J.J. Green.
911, what's your emergency?
Every day, EADS North America supports homeland security and defense missions here at home and around the globe. Whether it's responding to emergencies or disasters, providing military helicopters, or systems that patrol and secure our borders and coastlines, EADS North America delivers on our promises every day. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Work in government relations? The new career site PowerJobs.com is currently featuring powerful positions like Vice President of Government Affairs, Director of Legislative Affairs, and Deputy Political Director from top employers in Washington. Brought to you by Federal News Radio, Politico, and ABC7. PowerJobs.com is designed specifically for you, empowering today's top talent. PowerJobs.com.
Enjoy the comedy of Emmy Award-winning Dana Carvey and dance the night away to the sounds of Jim Belushi and the Sacred Hearts at the 26th Annual Leukemia Ball. It's presented by Bio in partnership with Genentech, Saturday, March 23rd. Take part in a fabulous auction and a chance to win one of two Mercedes-Benz. D.C.'s largest non-political fundraiser supports the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's critical research and patient services programs. For sponsorship opportunities or to purchase raffle tickets, visit leukemiaball.org.
Really, one website to find all government and military events happening in our area?
I know. With GovEvents.com, it's so easy to find government and military-related events happening near me and around the world. I can search by keyword, date, location, live event versus webcast, and so much more. And best of all, it's completely free.
I can't believe I haven't heard of this site before. What is it again?
It's GovEvents.com, the best place to find government events that matter to you, near you.
You're listening to the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Larry Allen's choice for the most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is, deep spending cuts are likely, lawmakers say, with no deal on sequester in sight. And what occurs to me, Larry, when I read the story when it first came out, and what occurred to me was that those deep spending cuts are likely, whether it's sequester or not. And I wonder if Congress and the agencies, and especially the contracting community, are really reconciled to that yet.
Well, I think in each of those elements that you just named, Francis, there are constituencies that have reconciled the fact that, look, whether you call it sequestration or some other term, the normal budgeting process, we have to cut discretionary spending. The question is to what degree and over what time frame. So there are people who have consigned themselves to say, look, at least we know what the sequestration cuts will be because they've been so widely talked about for a number of months. It's the devil you know in this case. And in fact, that's one of the things, reasons I picked this as number one. It could have been one of any, a number of articles, another of which specifically talked about contractor-related complacency, as if contractors had already figured that they were going to have this as part of their business plan anyway, and that the numbers were identifiable, if not the best news. So it looks right now to me that we're much more likely to have a sequestration this time around than we were last. But if you had a sequestration and nobody noticed, what would happen?
Yeah. So. Well, and it's been my contention, Dan, for a while that for the people who have been fighting sequestration the most, that was either an implied or explicit fear of theirs was that it could happen and people wouldn't notice that much, and people would say, oh, well, maybe the idea of less government spending, however that winds up being framed and shaped, maybe that's not such a bad idea.
Yeah, the problem you have here is we're running trillion-dollar deficits, and the sequestration cuts, however awful they are not going to actually solve that problem. So if one assumes that we have to at some point in time reduce those deficits significantly, the actual cuts are going to be greater than sequestration. So that's one problem. On the other hand, you have the fact that there is no government spending that someone at least didn't feel was justified. And often they had some legitimacy to it. The American people themselves are conflicted about this. I will say my impression is, I'm not an expert in terms of the budget financing. My impression is about a third of the cuts are what I'll call Washington cuts. When you spend a dollar and next year you spend 75 cents, that's a cut.
Mm-hmm.
But if you spent a dollar and planned to spend $1.20 next year and couldn't, that's not a cut.
Right, and you only spend $1.10.
Yes, that's a Washington cut. About a third of the sequestration cuts are actually what I call Washington cuts. They're not really cuts. They're reductions in the increase.
All right. We're almost out of time. Quick prediction. Sequestration, yes or no, Larry?
I'm going to say yes this time around, and in about a month from now, we'll know it.
All right. Dan, yes or no on sequestration, and why?
I've been saying yes since fall, September. And the reason is because I don't think you can get 50% in favor of any alternative.
All right. The most important federal news story of the week is according to Larry Allen, is deep spending cuts are likely, lawmakers say, with no deal on sequester in sight. Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal Business Partners, thank you for being on the countdown this week.
Thank you, Francis.
And Dan Mintz of ESEM Consulting, it's great to see you again, and thanks for being on the program today.
Always a pleasure.
All of the stories selected for this week's Federal News Countdown will be linked later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And the second big hour of In-Depth with Francis Rose is coming next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.